Welcome to Bellwether Friends. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like, or maybe you should just consider liking it. You don't have to like it. You should trust us because we're librarians. I'm Anna.
I'm Aline.
And every couple of weeks we get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 86, a movie advisory for spring 2018. Since we last brought you a movie roundup, we have seen 29 movies.
Maybe 31 movies. We did an end of year roundup and then we got MoviePass. And we started seeing movies at a speedier pace than before. So we don't want to wait until June because then we would have to talk about 50 movies.
Also, June is like 3 weeks from now.
Right, but we're still going to possibly have 3 movie advisory episodes this year.
Unless MoviePass adjusts its terms of service enough so that we go back to our usual pace of movie watching.
This is true, and this is a possibility because MoviePass is hemorrhaging money.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, they made it a really good deal, and we got it, and we used the heck out of it, and here we are.
Yeah, we have recouped our investment, which we made through Costco. So we got a year of MoviePass for $90.
Yep. A year of MoviePass for $90, which means if we've seen 29 movies, we're hovering at about $3 a movie.
Good job.
Good job, team.
And we're talking about movies in the theater. Obviously, we have
seen first-run movies. Sometimes we see them on weekend evenings, which would have cost $12.
Right. Usually we go on discount night anyway.
That's a good night for us.
It is a good night for us. Before we dive into the movies that we want to talk about. Obviously, we've increased the rate at which we're seeing movies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we have seen movies that we wouldn't have seen in the theater, and we also wouldn't have gotten on DVD from the library later?
I don't think so. When I look back at this list, there are not very many long shots, really. I mean, the things that were less than ideal still had something going on. I think that the key for us is that we take MoviePass to the art house cinema.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did not go across the river and into the woods very frequently in the 2 years previous to this. And we have been there 4 or 5 times in the last couple of months.
Yeah, we did it, especially when we were doing our Oscar run-up, but also, like,
oh, more than 4 or 5 now that you say,
right,
Oscar
also,
Reno.
We mentioned last time we went to see Dune at the theater. That was there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few that we'll discuss today that we saw there. But mostly it was Oscar possibilities.
Yeah, so we like movies. We see a lot of movies. That's one of the reasons we have had 2 movie episodes a year before now. And our discernment is not critical. I don't know how to put it nicely. We want to see movies that have ladies-centered. We like them to have lady creators.
Right.
And it's not a hard and fast rule. See Black Panther.
Well, we also like to see people of color in our movies.
We do.
And we like people of color to be directing. So those are the things that we prioritize. So we are not going to talk about the ones that we briefly touched on in our bracket / Oscar predictions episode. So sorry if you wanted to hear us talk about Call Me by Your Name or The Greatest Showman or
Black Panther.
Black Panther.
We have a list of all of the ones that we're not going to talk
about.
Right,
we're not talking about them.
We're not talking about or Coco or Ferdinand or Lady Bird or Phantom Thread or Proud Mary or The Post or The Shape of Water.
Oh, The Shape of Water. Oh, well, so if you want to hear our thoughts on any of those, go ahead and try and figure out which episodes we did them in. It'll be dependent on our tagging.
If, yeah, but there, we talked about the Oscars, and so if you look for Bellwether Friends Oscars. You can find it, and we will link it in the show notes.
I think mentioned Black Panther pretty much consistently for the last 4 or 5 episodes, so.
Or months. I mean, we were excited about Black Panther before it happened.
Right. So, anyway, go see Black Panther.
Definitely.
Might still be running.
It is.
It's coming out on DVD very soon. We'll be buying a copy.
And watching it every night.
Well, you might alternate it with Wonder Woman. I don't know.
Maybe not. So, shall we begin to work through our alphabetically arranged list?
Yes. Number one, Annihilation, based on the book series by Jeff Vandermeer. I read half of the first one, or listened to it, and boy, was it weird. But in an interesting way,
the movie was really beautifully realized.
Yeah.
I remember when you were reading
Trippy, or when other people were
reading it, because coworkers read it as well, I thought, there's a dude writing a book that's got all ladies in it. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I wish that there had been less, as much as I like him, less Oscar Isaac in the movie. Because when I was reading the half of the first book that I read, there were absolutely no men in the parts. That they were just the ladies out there getting progressively
shimmerier,
more messed up. So let's talk a little bit about the casting, because I think they did a great job. Natalie Portman was the main protagonist, but Gina Rodriguez was a revelation to those of us that haven't seen
Jane the Virgin.
Jane the Virgin, right? That's her.
Is that the one she's in?
I think.
Yes.
See, that's how much we haven't seen it. She was super butch.
She was super butch, and we liked her a lot. And Tessa Thompson was really not Valkyrie in this.
Nor was she the girl from Veronica Mars in this. Anyway, Tessa Thompson seems to be everywhere, and that's fine.
We're for it. And she's an introspective scientist in this. She's sort of soft-spoken.
Who turns into a tree thing. Oh, this is a good time to say that we're probably going to do some light spoiling for the movies that we talk about.
But just like with the Wolverine movies, our memories are not what they once were, and a lot of times when we're talking about something, it doesn't make any sense. So this is not going to be as spoilery as our Good Place episode, because we're not going to be plunging into details.
It's not fresh.
But it is possible that we will say something spoilery without even realizing it.
Right. So, Annihilation. Who would we recommend watch Annihilation? I think anyone who's interested in, like, a sci-fi movie. There are a precious few decent sci-fi movies that come out. So yeah. I would recommend anyone who likes sci-fi to watch Annihilation.
This is a good point. I used to have a group of people I went to see movies with, and we prioritized adaptations of books.
Yeah, it was
and
a good adaptation.
I
think that it departed in ways, or it combined, and I think they optioned the trilogy. I don't know where they're going to go from here. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. So I like to prioritize adaptations of books that can inform my reader's advising.
Right.
Even though I know it to be true that adaptations of movies are not accurate or precise, they still are using them as source material, so there's something. I've gotten enough of this trilogy from this movie to be able to say, hey, you might like to read this to somebody.
You want some trippy sci-fi?
Yeah.
Here you go.
And so don't at me. I don't want to hear about books versus movies, because you're not going to change my mind.
Oh, just kidding.
I prefer the movie. And always, because I can get the story in 90 to 120 minutes, and reading a book can take 4 to 6 hours. So
also in this one, the gore/violence level was at times difficult for me to watch.
That's a good point to bring up. It did have someone get eaten by a thing.
Yeah.
So if you don't like people to get eaten by things.
Yeah, then, and like a couple jump scares.
Oh, right. There was a good jump scare.
Right. So take that.
Yep.
When advising. Okay, next on the list, Blockers. When three parents stumble upon their daughter's pact to lose their virginity at prom, they launch a covert one-night operation to stop the teens from sealing the deal. This one, when we saw the preview, in the theater many times.
Many times.
We would say, nope, every time.
Yep, we thought, teen sex comedy, nope, nope. And then?
And then we were on Twitter and we saw Noelle Stevenson and Molly Ostertag come back and say, that was a surprisingly fun feminist romp with a lesbian plot.
So we jumped in the car and took ourselves to the theater.
What?
And we saw it. I think that it has been described as being sweetly feminist. It includes people of color. It has a lesbian subplot. There is an awesome scene where John Cena's wife, who is not in on the plot to foil the virginity losing.
Yeah. She is the explicitly
new one
feminist.
For, she was like, why is it not okay for your daughter to make her own decisions about this and that? And she's just tearing into him. And it's beautiful because the parents who are trying to keep the girls from following through on their plan are, they're just having this sort of knee-jerk reaction. And it's really fascinating to me to watch this because, of course, these parents are all younger than I am in this film world. And I'm like, everybody is plotting to have sex before the end of high school. This is not a new thing.
Speak for yourself.
Okay.
Not all everyone's.
Point. There was a lot of conversation around this topic 30 years ago when I was in high school. And so I know that this is not new, and I really appreciated the way they took this. And there was this, like, cool teen boy who wasn't... He was like, cool, I'm here for ya. But it wasn't like an opportunistic sort of terrible thing, because it was like, maybe not. And he's like, cool, that's cool too. Which I really appreciated.
So I would give this to pretty much anyone that wants like a high school comedy with, it's got, you know, your sex jokes and some beer chugging jokes and a few, but nothing that was too terrible except excessive vomiting. Like me, hate seeing vomit depicted on film. Or in real life.
Or
mentioned.
On radio.
At all.
Or discussed in any way.
That made this really hard to watch. I had to, like, close my eyes and ears until Aline told me it was okay during one particular scene.
It was cute.
I would still say I liked it, but yeah. I'm not sure I would watch it again unless I could leave the room for 10 minutes.
And I felt like they kind of had to do it. That's like part of the thing in a teen comedy
where
there is some big party going on. I don't know why they have to do it.
I prefer it in Clueless or whatever, where it's just a side character throwing up in the pool and you barely see them and then you move on. Like, it doesn't have to be one of the main characters, people.
Right. And this is sort of like everyone in a whole thing. And so, moving on.
sorry. I'll get off of my vomit soapbox now because it's collapsing under me.
It's wet.
Next up, alphabetically, but not in our hearts, 50 Shades Freed, the final film in the 50 Shades original trilogy.
You think it's going to be a franchise? They're going to go on forever?
Well, my guess is that they're going to remake the films from Christian's point of view, and it's going to be the exact same film.
Possibly. This is possible. It was worth it for the couple of shots of the Seattle skyline.
Right, we went for the Seattle skyline viewing. That's pretty much it. I mean, it was fine. They got a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I don't think it was that bad. But what was the bar that they were trying to raise it above?
Right. What were they expecting? I think that going to, now this is something that our listeners might be saying, they only went to see this because of MoviePass. And no. We saw the other ones in the theater. This is a thing that we are committed to. This 50 Shades trilogy and film.
So it's still a reliable, handed to your mostly lady patrons who are looking for a film that has some sex in it, but there's also a weird action plot where
it's a little bit of a thrillery, a little romantic thriller, suspense action. Yeah,
so, you know.
Also, okay to substitute viewing the movies for reading the books for your reader's advisory
definitely,
needs.
Definitely, definitely. So that's, I think, all we need to say about 50 Shades Freed.
Yep.
Another pleasant surprise for me was game night.
Yeah, I think that we went to game night at my sort of, like, nudging a little bit. It's
yeah,
not.
We both were like, okay, let's do it.
Let's see.
We both like Rachel McAdams, I think.
Yeah.
Basically, it's these three couples. Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams are the major ones, but they get together and have game night every week or whatever, and their next door neighbor is a former game night participant who's now uncoupled and has been excluded. And Jason Bateman's brother, Kyle Chandler, with whom he is very competitive, sets up the game night to end all game nights. But everything goes terribly wrong from then on.
Because there's, like, gangsters, and there's, like, real crime, and there's, like, fake crime.
And there's, yeah, there's a couple of fake-outs, and I don't think there was any vomiting.
I think there was.
Maybe there was.
I think there was, yeah.
So
after one of the fake deaths or real deaths,
maybe
there was.
So it was funny, and it moved right along, and I would find it enjoyable.
Yeah, it was funny, and it was good. And so the couples that comprised the game night were Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams, and there was another couple that had been together a long time, and then there was their friend who had the revolving door
yeah.
girlfriend.
Oh, the Irish lady.
And then he brings to this ultimate game night a grown-up. He has a tendency to date young women who work in stores in the mall is a sort of running theme, and then he brings a grown-up lady who is, like, contributing to the solving of the questions and yeah, mystery right. and crime that is going on for the ultimate game night, and she's great and we had a lot of fun watching her, and there are little inter-couple dynamic things, and there are like longtime friend dynamic things and sibling dynamic things, and like the friend who is sort of like, we're not friends with them anymore because, you know, they got weird, or it was fun.
Yeah, I would, anyone who has just a fun, action-packed, humor movie.
Yeah.
That works. Take us away on the next one.
The next one is Insidious, The Last Key, which this was a MoviePass movie that we were just sort of casting about. Hey, we're free tonight, we're going to go to a movie, let's go see
something.
This one. And it's the fourth entry in the Insidious series. And
have we seen the first three entries?
We have not seen the first three entries. And they have a little bit of a, what were those others that we saw? Conjuring people?
Yeah, they're kind of like
Because there is the central character in this one is parapsychologist Dr. Elise Rainier, played by Lynn Shay, who is awesome. And she's an older woman at the center of this movie. So she's goes out and researches these things, and she's got these two young sidekicks who are ghost hunting dudes.
Dorky guys.
Totally dorky. And it was a really good paranormal investigator movie. There was some scary stuff. She had some backstory that was scary, and her supporting dudes were consistently funny and supportive. And we were so surprised because it was one of those, it's Friday night, we're going to go to a movie, we're going to get some popcorn, and it was great.
There just aren't that many middle-aged lady-helmed horror movies.
Not really.
Other than Halloween.
So, I don't know if we'll see the first three.
Or any
of them.
I don't know either.
But I would give this to a fan of Conjuring and Conjuring 2.
Yeah.
And then I would want to know what was wrong with it, because it got a bad score on Rotten Tomatoes, and we liked it.
We liked it a great deal more than another horror offering that we saw on this list. To be revealed later. But I did have a patron last week come in and ask me for this movie.
And you were like, hey, I saw that.
Yeah, I was.
What is next on our list?
Next is Love, Simon. Neither of us have read the book upon which Love, Simon is based.
We have heard that the audiobook is an excellent delivery device for this book.
The director for this also directs Riverdale, The Flash, and Supergirl. So, I mean, it's not a surprise that we liked it.
So, a teen comedy where the kid falls in love with
someone he doesn't know because they are exchanging emails.
Anonymous emails.
And the way that it was set up was interesting, and I don't know if this is like the book or not, but that he, at various points, he thinks it's X person that he knows based on whatever context clues he's reading. And so you think maybe it's this person, but because you're watching the movie and you know that the crime doesn't get solved on Law and Order until minute number 57, it can't possibly be that person yet, right? So you're like, is it this person or is it not this person? And so you're kind of like going along with him?
Yes. And it's cute and funny and it's gay. Did we say it was gay?
Super gay.
Super gay. And it is sweet and touching, and Simon has a adorable relationship with his mom and with his dad and with his sister, and
his
he's got
group.
These friends, yep. And he goes to this school, and it's got the vibe of a John Hughes movie in the sort of suburban privilege sort of world, and there's like an everything is beautiful little element of it. And there are these touching moments at the end of the movie. I was like, I cried 6 times. How many times did you cry? And Anna's like, I don't think I cried 6 times. And I was like, well. So I won the crying in Love,
Award.
Simon.
Okay.
And I was even able to name all of the times. I was like, maybe I didn't cry 6 times. And I was like naming all of the different scenes. Yep, I did cry 6 times. So we, again, on the teen movie, like, go see Blockers. Go see Love, Simon. If you liked a teen movie when you were a teen, or if you like teen movies as a grown-up, these two are great.
Yeah, for sure. They are winners.
Winners.
I feel like it's been a little bit of a drought for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Our next movie
was
another movie pass
thing. It also made me cry. Just kidding. It was written and directed by Aaron Sorkin.
So we went to see Molly's Game without realizing it was written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, because we were like, Molly's Game, and we read a description and was like, it's a woman who was an Olympian and then she starts running a poker game. Okay. And then we sat down in the theater and it says written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, and we were like, oh boy.
It was fine. Idris Elba is the other. So it's Idris Elba and Jessica Chastain.
Yes.
Basically carrying the movie. And they do. There's a lot of talking.
And Jessica Chastain is beautiful. And
she is beautiful.
She's running this high-stakes poker game, so she has to dress really nicely, and she wears these fancy dresses. And that's a little male-gazy. I liked the lady power, and it was still super male-gazy.
Yeah, so I felt like there was a lot of talking, but it wasn't necessarily her. It was her talking, but it wasn't about her. It was about, like, what a great person she was, because she wasn't divulging her clients, even though she was basically bankrupt and living out of her car or whatever.
Yep.
And so it was just, like, what a noble person this is. And, like, if someone was like, and I did that, what a noble person you are. Like, every time she tried to say something, you could feel the film being like, this is great. You're so wonderful.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like, if you want to see the high roller stuff in action, or if you want to just a glimpse at how people with too much money are spending their money, and if you're the kind of person that used to watch, like, the poker reality shows or whatever, you don't know, I think it's a good movie. It's just a general purpose movie, like, here, why don't you watch this?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was on TV, I'd be like, oh, it's Molly's game.
Right? Oh, look, there's Molly's game. Click. Next on our list is Pacific Rim Uprising.
John Boyega stars as the rebellious Jake Pentecost.
Oh, Jake.
A once promising Jaeger pilot whose legendary father, Idris Elba, gave his life to secure humanity's victory against the monstrous kaiju.
Jake is joined by gifted rival pilot Lambert. Fate of the Furious is Scott Eastwood.
Oh my god, they had so much chemistry.
So much chemistry. So we would have seen Pacific Rim Uprising without MoviePass.
For sure.
Because of John Boyega. And we spent a lot of time shipping
various people
in the movie.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I spent some quality time trying to remember Pacific Rim.
Doesn't matter. They gave us a nutshell at the beginning.
They did give us a nutshell, but then I was like, is that how those things worked in Pacific Rim?
Yeah, I know.
And so on. So, I mean, I saw it in the theater back then.
I don't think you needed to have seen Pacific Rim.
You don't need
really,
to have seen, no.
Although, I guess some of the scientist interplay might have been more meaningful if you...
I do like an evil lady. There was...
She wasn't evil, though.
Right. She was evil.
Spoiler.
See, I was just going with the liking an evil lady.
She seemed evil.
Most ladies do.
Right? And that's okay with me. So, Pacific Rim Uprising, and Pacific Rim for that matter, a good action movie, man versus alien.
Futury, science-y, technology.
Stomping of entire cities.
Little transformery.
So, I like it because I don't like a disaster movie.
Wait, there was teen appeal in this one, too.
Yeah, there was a scrappy young teen.
Scrappy young teen. Super scrappy young lady teen.
Yeah. I don't like a disaster movie, but for some reason I'm okay if robots and aliens are flattening Tokyo.
Take from that what you will.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next one was... definitely one that we wouldn't have seen if we hadn't had MoviePass. And this one we saw at the Art House Cinema. It is called The Party. It was, I believe, written and directed by Sally Potter and stars Kristen Scott Thomas and Timothy Spall. But Patricia Clarkson was the...
everything.
...hero and was given all the best, most acerbic lines.
And it's black and white and everyone is gloriously lit and made up, and we had seen a preview for it a couple of times when we were at the Art House, and it only played at the Art House for a week, so we would have missed it if we hadn't been at Loose Ends on that particular night without a Pacific Rim to lure us to Cineplex.
But it's set just in this one apartment flat, it's in the UK, and Kristen Scott Thomas has just won an election to...
She's gotten a cabinet appointment.
A cabinet appointment, right. And... but I think it was an election.
Okay.
But it doesn't... it does not matter. And her husband reveals... this, I don't think, is a spoiler. It's in the preview. Reveals that he's been having an affair, basically. And it's clear from her picking up her phone all the time that she's been having an affair. And so then their friends are coming over for this party in which they're supposed to be celebrating her cabinet appointment. And they're all having their various interpersonal issues. And yeah, it's just a lot going on. It's also a lot of talking. And it...
Cherry Jones and Emily Mortimer play a lesbian couple, so we're into that.
Right.
And there was... it was definitely... it was there was an intimacy to the evening.
Yeah.
It was four couples. And one member of one couple did not arrive yet.
Right.
And everyone was wound up about something.
And so you have people in different configurations and vomiting, of course. And because it's a party.
Right.
And it felt very much like a play to me.
It did.
Because of the very limited setting and the, like, just talking action, which... it hit me in the right mood. I'd probably give this to my dad and say, here.
Yeah.
Try watching this. Maybe I'll write that to him in his next letter.
Okay.
If you're listening, Dad, you should try The Party.
The next one is A Quiet Place, which is the horror thriller starring John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, who are a couple.
Okay, okay. Am I the last person to know?
Yes. It is set in a near future where there are aliens who eat people who navigate or catch you entirely by sound. And so everyone is silent. And there are all of these details of living in the world and being silent, and something has come and most everybody has been killed by the aliens. And so when you go shopping, you're essentially looting the store that was left behind. If you are walking around, you're barefoot. Why are you laughing?
Because Tuska Tiny Cat does not believe in quiet places.
She does not. She is jingling and messing about.
She's
with
playing
some
with
toys.
A rainbow.
She has a catnip rainbow. It is great. There is a deaf actress in it. There is sign language being used. There is
a very good argument that if people can handle the captions being put on the screen during A Quiet Place, they could probably handle them being put on the screen all the time.
Yeah, I'm for it. That's the worst thing about seeing movies in the theater.
Yeah, we want captions all the time.
Yep. What else do you
want
to say about
A Quiet
Place?
I don't know if you remember, but you had to convince me that I was going to go see A Quiet Place.
Yep.
Because it's scary, and there are aliens.
It's a horror movie.
It's a horror movie, but it was really good. It was scary, but it wasn't gory.
No, it was not bloodless, but it wasn't gory.
Yeah, I think I would recommend most everyone see A Quiet Place, just across the board.
Yeah, it's definitely got some jump scares, but it's not like a slasher movie.
No, it was really interesting. I would call it sci-fi in that way of like, okay, well, aliens that attack via sound are among us, so this is the way in which life has adapted. This is what we do now.
And that was interesting. The way it was shown was very interesting.
Yeah.
They were isolated on this farm, but there were people across the valley on other farms. They set fires at night to show that they were there. And
the main character, the older daughter, she was really great.
Yeah, she was amazing.
So, moving on to another movie I had to be convinced that I wanted to see.
You're welcome.
Ready Player One, which had an extended car racing scene that I could not watch because of vertigo.
Oh, because it was the perspective of it was from the driver's seat. And that's not what we like in our movies because I'm old and Anna gets motion sick.
Thanks, Steven.
So, Ready Player One is an adaptation of a book. Ah! A book that I read.
I was going to say, I didn't read it.
I listened to it because Will Wheaton read the audiobook, and right. It's great. I really liked Ready Player One. It is a doodly movie. It has got all of the 80s references. I liked it a lot. I was excited to see a Spielberg adaptation of it to the screen. I was not disappointed in it. It was definitely a product of an earlier time in my life. I probably wouldn't have liked the book so much if I read it in the last couple of years, and I might not have had any interest in the movie, but I liked the virtual reality world that is sort of central to the plot.
The Oasis.
It was very interesting to me in the book and in the movie, and there's a romance.
There's romance. I like the message of it, you know.
Yeah.
So sort of like hunt for clues to inherit this magical thing, you know, like the Westin game
mm-hmm.
or something.
Yeah.
And I like Lena Waithe, and there's a tiny bit of Simon Pegg. And, you know, I find the main guy was like boring white bread.
Wade Watts?
Wade Watts. I prefer Wade from Deadpool, frankly.
I really like that he was so uninteresting, because that was the point of him.
Okay.
Was being, so, he was supposed to be this every bro, and he was.
I know, okay. So, yes, I just am not interested in every bros, and I always wonder why we have to have every bros, and why can't we have lady bros?
Right. Point.
So, there is a connection between Ready Player One and our next movie, in which the love interest slash cool girl in Ready Player One, played by Olivia Cook, also was the main character in Thoroughbreds, which is a very sort of small...
Again, at the dark, art house cinema. Yeah. A small, dark movie about two young women.
High school girls who decide that one of them has a controlling stepfather, and they sort of decide that it would be better if he were dead.
Yeah, and their connection, Thoroughbreds, and their connection is from having been
horse girls
earlier in their lives.
They're in suburban Connecticut, so they've got one of them, the one with the stepfather, has a lot more money, I would say. But obviously, yes, if you are a horse girl in Connecticut, your family has had some kind of income.
Yes.
And so I feel like it was black and white, but I don't think it was.
It was not black and white. I remember vividly some color. Now, Lily's wardrobe was mostly black and white.
And Anton Yelchin, in one of his last roles, was like a local drug-dealing, wrong-side-of-the-tracks guy who gets sucked in to their...
web.
Poor planning? I don't know.
Yes.
So, It was another one that's written and directed by the same guy, and I felt like it was interesting, and then at the end I was like, what happened? Did we not know how to wrap this up? Okay.
It had elements that seemed theatrical, like a play, there, because it was a pretty limited scope. It was interesting. If I would give it to fans of Heavenly Creatures.
I was just wondering what the actual Tina Peel would be for this movie. Do you think it would have any?
I think that there are teens who have bloodthirsty fantasies about parents and step-parents, yes.
What about fans of Heathers?
I don't know.
Heavenly Creatures, eh? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, moving on to one of our Dark Horse favorites.
We really liked Tomb Raider.
We did like Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider was very Indiana Jonesy.
Super Indiana Jonesy. There were scenes that seemed frame for frame Indiana Jonesy.
And we're talking about the Indiana Jones that we like. Mostly Last Crusade and...
original flavor.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
The other good thing about Tomb Raider, so Tomb Raider, she's like 21, and her dad, Dominic West, has disappeared, presumed dead, and she's got like loads of money at her disposal, but she won't sign the thing that says my dad is dead and inherit all the money, so she goes off looking for him once she figures out some inkling as to where he might be, and... hijinks ensue. Tombs are raided. There is a cute guy that she destroys the boat of.
He is cute.
The good thing about that is that, so he's cute, and you're like, if this were James Bond, she would totally have slept with him and then wandered off to do her tomb raiding. But, like, there's an acknowledgement that he's cute, but I don't think they even never kiss. It's just like, nothing there at all. And I really liked that. I was like, great. There's no romantic subplot. It's just a cute guy.
I appreciated being able to ship them and be dissatisfied.
Yeah,
as I am accustomed to in most movies I see, whoever I am shipping is not getting together. I put them in a boat, and they were in a boat.
Perfect. There were not so many ladies in this movie.
Nope.
Other than Lara Croft. But she did a great job. She did so many stunts that involved using her upper body strength.
She did. She was dangling by a knuckle more than once. And this is, she's played by Alicia Vikander. She is very good, and she's very beautiful and strong without oozing sex all over the place.
Yes.
So it's very...
Angelina Jolie.
Well, and but Lara Croft in the game and everything, too. And we really enjoyed it. It wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be, which sounds like faint praise, but is not, because we have really low expectations for action movies.
Right.
Even if they have a woman at the center of them.
And this is one where I would want to show it to Little G, but there were a few bad guy deaths that I think were too gruesome.
He'll be into them in like a year.
Right. So like once you're okay with that level of gruesomeness for your children, it's a good family action movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in like Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
There's some scary bad guy action in Indiana Jones.
Yeah. So give it to your Indiana Jones friends.
Yep.
That's my advisory there. So next up is the, out of all the horror movies we saw, which was three, I guess, four. I guess the next one is a horror movie too, technically.
We are all about horror at Bellwether Friends now that I've gotten Anna on board with watching all the horror.
I am doing my best. So Truth or Dare. As soon as we saw the preview for Truth or Dare the first time, we were like, we have to go see that! That looks terrible! Indeed, it is terrible. So
it's more terrible than the previews led us to believe.
Well, the previews revealed almost everything except for the weird part where it was a ritual gone wrong and there's a woman who can't speak because her tongue has been cut out.
And put in a box. Anyway. And the reason her tongue was taken out of the box, and that's the reason the demons are free again.
Anyway.
It would have been much better if it was just like...
Just watch the preview.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to recommend this.
Oh? To whom?
To people who like Scream, and I Know What You Did Last Summer. Because it's very similar.
Yeah, it's the same exact same
it's
thing.
It's a group of young people in college.
Unnaturally attractive college kids.
Who get picked off one by one.
Yeah,
and it's kind of a cool thing. Like, they have this... weird face filter, Snapchat filter that happens when they're like
taken over by the truth or dare demon. Yeah.
Well, the plot is if you refuse the dare or if you lie during truth, you die.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And then because it would be too easy to just tell the truth, even though the truth really hurts a few times.
Right.
They have come around to introduce the twist that for every two truths, you have to do a dare.
Right. Otherwise, it would just be a bunch of soul-searching conversations between...
Why don't they just tell the truth?
Yeah. We were like, why don't you just tell the truth every time?
And then they introduced
the
twist.
By the way, it's only two truths and then a dare. Oh, okay. Got it.
And the dare is always like, jump off the roof or stab your best friend in the heart or something really
shoot her. Okay.
Yeah.
So it was enjoyably bad, I'm going to say. And it's good for people who like Scream and I Know You Did Last Summer. And just like, not very good.
Yeah.
But still enjoyable.
Pretty much.
I had higher hopes for our next one.
Much higher.
Winchester, starring Helen Mirren as the heiress to Winchester fortune and Winchester house. So this is based on a real lady in a real house in California. And it's called the Winchester Mystery House, I think.
Yep.
And I've always wanted to go visit it because you can, like, go and take tours of it. And there are, like, staircases that go nowhere and there are, like, rooms that are blocked off completely and all sorts of cool architectural things. And the unfortunate part about the movie is that Winchester Rifle Company's board of directors has decided that they want to declare Helen Mirren mentally unstable so that they can take over operations of the company or whatever. And so they send this guy in, Dr. Eric Price, to evaluate her.
Ugh.
And everything has to be told through his perspective. And it's really annoying. We don't care about him at all.
No.
We didn't care about him during the movie, and we still don't care about him now.
He's really, really terrible.
It would have been so much better if it had just been, like, about Mrs. Winchester and her house.
Right. Because the doctor has, like, something going on.
His where wife or girlfriend killed herself, or
he's got ghosts, and
she
is he self-medicating?
Yeah, he has laudanum. He's self-medicating,
so he's having hallucinations, and so they're thinking that, I think they just hired this charlatan to get to go out and visit and then just make up whatever right. they want to hear because he needs money, of course.
Right.
And Mrs. Winchester is not a crazy old lady.
No, she's not. She's like trying to put ghosts to rest.
Yep.
By building them rooms based on their specifications. Anyway, so I think it could have been a lot better than it was, but I will never regret watching Hill and Mirren do anything.
Nope. Nor regret getting to see the scenes of the house,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yes, we got, there was some exteriors were shot there and stuff.
So our last one is A Wrinkle in Time, which is another book adaptation, which I thought they did a good job adapting a difficult source material.
And they brought it into the 21st century in ways that I needed it to be brought into the 21st century. Having reread just a few years back,
yep,
I was horrified at the circa 1960 sort of lens. I don't know how to describe it. And I feel like they did a really good job bringing it forward for Meg and her family. And it was amazingly visually realized.
Yeah. This is another one I would recommend to everyone. I know that it got a lot of critical...
they didn't do this, and they didn't do that, static, and blah, 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 blah.
And a lot of which was like, it wasn't as accessible to adults or something. I don't even know.
That's like, true. There were a lot of complaints. They're like, I just wasn't that interested in it. It was like, well, it's a story for kids.
So, I think they did a great job. Ava DuVernay did a great job, I will say. And the main actress, Storm Reid,
was fabulous. Oh my gosh, she was amazing.
This is another one where I did not care about her, like, love interest guy. We could have done without him. I know he was probably in the book. It's been a while since I read it.
Well, you know, I don't know if he was a love interest. I think that he was, like, sort of a dude who was popular at school, and Meg is not, and so there's this sort of fascination more than anything else. You're skeptical? You think he was a love interest?
I think...
Maybe I just was blocking that out.
If he wasn't a love interest, there's absolutely no reason for him to be there, because he didn't do anything. We can rewatch. I would be happy to rewatch it. Which is my highest compliment.
It is.
As you know. So let's talk about, since that's the wrap-up of the movies we did see, let's talk about a few movies that we're looking forward to. We have some that we're jointly looking forward to. For example, top of the list, Ocean's 8. Coming out June 8th.
Cannot wait. Tonight is the Met Gala. I was watching coverage before I left work, waiting with bated breath for Sandra Bullock to sneak out of a back room and take somebody's jewels. Yeah.
Deadpool 2. I worry that all of the descriptions and previews of Deadpool 2 have no information whatsoever, because that says to me, well, we were still shooting yesterday and doing script updates, but
we're going to have a movie out for you, really.
I swear, but you never know. And Ant-Man and the Wasp, we will be looking forward to that.
We have not become Marvel Cinematic Universe aficionados. We are into the Wasp, and we loved Deadpool, and
right,
yeah,
we have not seen Infinity War yet.
We're seeing Infinity War tomorrow night, so stand by for our hot takes on Infinity War
in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 2 more weeks.
Other ones that we I know are both looking forward to is Skyscraper.
Oh my gosh!
Coming out July 13th with The Rock.
He jumps from one building to another!
Yes, very improbably.
Defying the laws of physics, that is The Rock for you.
Crazy Rich Asians coming out August 17th.
Did you read that?
No, but
I... Adapted from a book. Again, I am super looking forward to it. I've only heard amazing and wonderful things about the book, and I know enough about it to suggest it to readers, so I don't have to read it.
Sorry to Bother You, which I don't know anything about except it has Tessa Thompson in it, so...
And Lakeith Stanfield.
Okay, so we're good.
We are on board with that, yeah.
A couple that we're going to be watching next week, Breaking In, a thriller with Gabrielle Union at the center, so we are there for that.
Yep.
And Life of the Party with Melissa McCarthy.
Yep.
Which we have consistently gone to see most Melissa McCarthy helmed movies, so...
Yep, we're gonna go see this one. Up.
So go ahead and tell me the ones that vary
on your list. There were a couple. I was just checking off all the ones you were mentioning. There are a few documentaries coming out, and two of them that make me cry at the previews, so I don't know if I'm gonna manage to watch them, are RBG, about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Won't You Be My Neighbor, about Mr. Rogers, because they are awesome and interesting people. Disobedience, starring Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams as ladies who were involved in their youth, and one was drummed out of the community and the other stayed in the community, is currently playing in limited release. I don't know if we're going to get over to Boston to see it, but maybe it'll roll out here. I saw a tweet that had the promo picture from Book Club, which is a Nancy Meyer movie, and someone tweeted, "I am this movie looks great years old," because it stars Candace Bergen and Diane Keaton.
Or does it just look like Nancy Meyer?
Oh, I don't know. It must be Nancy Meyer. How could it not be Nancy Meyer? It's a bunch of 60-year-old women who read 50 Shades of Grey in their book club, and it changes their lives. And I think that is probably going to be hilarious.
Oh, boy.
The last two that I have deviating from the ones you mentioned are The Wife, starring Glenn Close and Jonathan Pryce, and he is a literary
lion,
and she is his long-suffering wife, and there is a twist that we have already guessed, and we can't wait to see it realized on film. And The Meg. You might remember Megalodon, this giant shark, that is a thriller book from the 90s, and it is being made, and The Meg, it has become a series. I just discovered because a patron was in asking for the rest of the Meg books, and I lost my mind realizing that it had become a series, and it's being made into a movie with Jason Statham, and I am all over an action movie with a megalodon giant evil shark.
You might have to do some convincing.
I went to cultural night at school this week.
Okay. Okay, well, I will...
What else do you... What do you have deviating?
I will take your Meg and I will raise you Uncle Drew.
Oh my gosh, really? I put it down.
It has Lisa Leslie in it.
I have it on here. I mean, I wrote it down when I looked at the 60 movies and I wrote down 30 of them and then narrowed down the ones. I had it on the list.
Yeah, so okay. Uncle Drew is just, it's a basketball movie. It looks to be probably not very...
It looks exactly like those movies where Eddie Murphy plays six different roles.
Yeah, and so
except
it's got,
they're all different old basketball players.
It's got basketball players of yore dressed up to look extremely old, including Shaquille O'Neal and Lisa Leslie and Reggie Miller. And I just think it would be funny to watch. Maybe not in the theater.
Maybe we can get Gary to go see it with us.
I'm not sure we could. And The Spy Who Dumped Me.
I thought that looked... had some potential.
Has been on my list. It has, it's Kate McKinnon in it.
Okay. I didn't notice that from the list of things we were looking at. I didn't notice the Kate McKinnon factor, but I'm here for that.
And The Little Stranger is just an adaptation of Sarah Waters' book.
Oh, really?
It comes out August 31st, so it's on the tail end of the summer, but it is, like, creepy Sarah Waters-y action, although I don't believe it's super gay. Sorry.
Sarah, what were you thinking?
I don't know. So that's what we've got for our movie rundown. Do we have any obsessions?
I have a regular obsession to start with. It is called Pixel Art Color by Number. And it is an app that I have on my phone. I saw an advertisement for it in one of my other games because I am a sucker. So it's a free app in iOS. I don't know if it's available in Android. It is like the Mystery Mosaics that we have talked about coloring. You see the picture and you select the picture and you zoom in until you can see the numbers in the squares, and you've got the palette at the bottom of the screen and you fill in the numbers and then you have a picture. And it's one of those kind of sort of meditative poking at your phone while you're watching something on TV sort of thing, or when you're trying to fall asleep sort of things. And I'm loving it.
Great. I am almost done with, I'm stuck to it, with Song of Blood and Stone by L. Penelope, who we saw at Day of Dialogue last year.
Is the Song of Blood and Stone your musical obsession?
No, it's not a real song.
Okay.
So it is a fantasy novel in which people have a power called Earth Song, and they can control the elements and such. But the main character is a woman named Jesminda who is in an unusual situation where her father is an earth singer and her mother is, it's called silent. And so all of the silent are like light skinned and orange haired, and all of the earth singers are dark skinned. And so she is dark-skinned, but she lives in the land of the silent, and so she has grown up being ostracized, and is put in the position of rescuing this guy who's been spying on the other side of the lines, and who ends up being her love interest, and a great deal more in a complicated way. So, basically, if you're looking for fantasy from an African-American author, which deals with race, but mostly is an epic fantasy / romance, then this could be the book for you. It's a series opener. I don't know how long the series is going to be, but I'm enjoying it. It's been blurred by Daniel Jose Alder and K. Arsenault Rivera and so on.
Well, that works for you.
Right. It does work for me.
Anna, do you have a musical obsession?
My musical obsession is Despacito by Luis Fonsi and featuring Daddy Yankee. So this is one that I have been... It just appears in my head periodically, and I can't stop it. So I'm just going to lean in and embrace it.
My musical obsession is Almost Like Praying by Lin-Manuel Miranda, featuring artists for Puerto Rico, which came out to raise money, and we bought, and we listened to, and we loved, and you should listen to it and love it too, if you haven't already.
Yes, definitely.
And watch the video, because it's really cute to see everybody together. We'll put the video in the show notes, as usual.
I think we made it to the end of our exhaustive movie discussion.
Thank you for sticking with us.
You can find us on Twitter at BellwetherFriends, BellwetherFrnds. You can find us on Facebook. Our shows post to Tumblr. If you want, you can look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at SurlySpice, SurlySpice.
Our In-N-Out music was provided by Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie, HimissJulid.
Bye!
Bye!